Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. CBS News projects that Democrat Andy Beshear wins another term as Kentucky governor. CBS News Director of Elections and Surveys Anthony Salvanto says the question is, can a Democrat win in a deeply red state in the general election?
This is the kind of thing where you say, okay, if a Democrat can perform well in a state where Donald Trump won by a wide, wide margin, well, maybe he's onto something. Maybe he's onto some kind of formula for the Democrats.
CBS News estimates that Ohio Issue 1, which would amend the state's constitution to protect access to abortion, and Issue 2, legalizing marijuana use for adults, are both leaning yes. In Philadelphia, CBS News projects Democrat Sherelle Parker wins the race for mayor, the first woman to hold the office, and CBS News projects Democrat Gabriel Amo wins the special election to represent Rhode Island's 1st District in Congress. Israeli troops are now inside Gaza City as airstrikes continue throughout the besieged enclave. It comes 1 month after Hamas launched the deadly attacks in Israel and took hostages. The Gaza Health Ministry reports over 10,300 deaths. CBS's Charlie Daggett traveled with the Israeli army during its assault on northern Gaza.
We crossed the desert scrubland of northeast Gaza until we reached Beit Hanun. The city had an estimated pre-war population of more than 60,000 people. Looking around, it's hard to imagine anyone lived here at all.
I know that the military objective is to destroy Hamas.
Mm-hmm.
But you destroyed everything.
Yeah, because look, Hamas is using infrastructure. I mean, just 10 minutes ago, we had a serious battle with a group of Hamas inside the school.
Former Meta engineer Arturo Behar tells a Senate subcommittee that not enough is being done to address the harmful effects of Facebook and Instagram on teenagers. Behar says in his own home,
my 14-year-old daughter joined Instagram. She and her friends began having awful experiences, including repeated unwanted sexual advances, harassment. She reported these incidents to the company, and it did nothing.
A common veterinary drug used by American pork farms could soon be pulled from the market. CBS's Matt Piper.
The FDA says there are concerns that a carterbox could pose a cancer risk in humans who eat hot dogs, sausages, and other foods made from animals given the drug. It's added to feed given to pigs to combat infections and help fatten them up. But there have been probes and warnings for nearly a decade. What's not clear is why the FDA did not move to pull carterbox sooner after a 2016 warning, which came years after other countries moved to curb use of the feed ingredient.
This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform, you need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
Be a part of the resistance. Check out the Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson, Monday nights at 7 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK, and on the Civic Media app.
We're being asked to chip in more to maintain American Family Field for the next 27 years. Wisp Politics reports an amendment to the ballpark bill would increase the Brewers' contribution by $10 million. The ask from taxpayers would go down by $36 million. Senators are adjusting the bill that passed the Assembly to address the concerns of enough lawmakers to get the 17 votes necessary to pass. Plans for the National Football League draft in Green Bay are coming together. The league says it will happen on April 24th through the 26th in 2025. Fox Valley leaders are counting on as many as 250,000 football fans to come to Northeast Wisconsin for the draft. Organizers are still working on the details, but most of the events will happen in and around Lambeau Field. Nate Wiggyhoe, Civic Media News.
The Bucks getting ready to host the Pistons. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks are at home tomorrow night when they face the Detroit Pistons at Fiserv Forum. Tip-off time at 7 o'clock. College hoops, the Badgers men's basketball season kicked off with a decisive win, beating the Arkansas State Red Wolves 105-76. Up next, they'll host the number 9th-ranked Tennessee Volunteers. NFL, the Packers say that wide receiver Christian Watson is okay and did not suffer a concussion. The Packers beat the Rams 20-3 against backup quarterback Brett Rippon. Today, Rippon was cut, and L.A. signed quarterback Carson Wentz. Baseball, Craig Counsell tells JS Online he needed a new challenge, and that's why he's leaving for the Chicago Cubs. Brewers owner Mark Antanasio on how he learned Counsell was leaving Milwaukee.
I was informed by Craig that he was going to the Cubs. For several weeks, we've had an offer that would have made him the highest paid manager in baseball. He made a decision to go another direction.
That's Mark Antanasio with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Cloudy tonight with scattered rain showers likely. Lowest dip down to about 39. Winds out of the east, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy again tomorrow. Scattered thunderstorms likely, 50. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 39 degrees.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
2040 and funding to boost electric grid stability, prevent blackouts, and lower energy costs for consumers by expanding cheaper renewable energy. The law also includes critical reforms to the clean energy permitting process to counter the coordinated, fossil fuel-funded, anti-renewable disinformation campaign in rural areas of the state that have been working to block farmers and rural governments from installing renewable energy.
Things that breathe?
Yep.
You mean people that breathe?
Everything that breathes.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.brandblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Jane sent me an email yesterday that had a clip in it from one of those, I think, Newsmax, OAN, one of those right-wing cable news outlets. And the clip was basically saying, just how horrible everything is, how we're being taxed. Every dollar that we earn, the government's taking. I think his number was like 60 cents out of every dollar, which, is kind of ridiculous. But hey, he had a twisted math and whole bunch of, graphs and arrows and whole bunch of things, basically telling you that you only get to keep 40 cents of your dollar, of your hard-earned dollar. And it gave me the vibe of, 2010, the Tea Party thing, trying to restoke that anger over taxes. While our Republican Congress is trying to defund a good portion of the IRS, who wanted to go after the rich people who have been cheating the tax system for so long. But hey, got to stoke that fear. So I thought it'd be a good opportunity to reach out to somebody who probably knows a lot more than that guy does, and maybe share some thoughts on how progressive is our tax code. And, how much do we spend? That's why I've asked our good friend Mateus Vernango to come talk with us. Mateus is an economics professor there at Bucknell University. Mateus, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
So I sent you the clip of this guy going on this rant about how every dollar, Mateus, 61 cents is paid in taxes. Is that accurate?
Well, it's on your first dollar. You have to remember that the marginal tax rates, as income goes up, at some point you stop paying sort of taxes, so to speak, and the same goes for payroll taxes and whatnot. So once you compute all of those things, it all depends. The very wealthy pay way less than that. It is an average. As an average, it doesn't say much. The tax rate in the United States for the developed countries, if you look at the developed countries, you know, in Western Europe and comparable sort of economies, we pay relatively low levels of taxes. So we're at the low end of the tax spectrum.
But they also get health care and retirement security.
Yes, and the spending and the public spending is much less too. So we are, you know, contrary to what they would make you believe, that we have a gigantic, very intrusive state. We have a relatively small state that spends not too much and does not provide a very extensive, safety net for the public. And that, you know, it doesn't tax much. And the tax, I should say, part of the story there was a suggestion that our tax system is too progressive. And of course, the tax system is somewhat progressive. So after taxes, we have a little bit less inequality than we would have, before taxes. So it is progressive in that sense. Yes, sure. You know, we tax more the very wealthy than we tax the public income taxes. So, you know, there is a line that it's very common in Fox News. Not that I watch it too much, but and it's very typical of conservative economists. You know, they come out and say, you know, people, there are 50% of people don't pay taxes or something along those lines. And you know, it's obviously, you know, it's income tax that they mean, because the poor do pay, you know, the working class pays, as that guy was showing. You know, if you pay payroll taxes, and that would be the largest sort of chunk for most working people, and then you pay obviously sales taxes, and so once you look at that, the poor pay considerably more than the very wealthy. So I think there are two things that are important in this. You know, one is understand that although the system is, you know, progressive, it's not particularly strongly progressive as in other parts of the advanced economies. And the problems that we have, you know, the problems with the economy, the inequality that has increased brutally and, you know, since the 80s, is associated to the fact that our tax system is now considerably less progressive than it used to be. So when you look at the history of the income tax is a thing that had to be fought. You know, it wasn't, you know, it was like the 8-hour, day. It was something that the working class fought for, because it was an idea equivalent today of taxing the rich. And the rich said, no, the income tax is unconstitutional. And you know, an amendment had to be passed in order to guarantee the income tax. And it only really became a relatively high income tax with the war, with the Second World War. And it goes to, you know, 90% of GDP for the marginal tax dollar. So it's not your first dollar that paid that humongous sort of, that's what people forget. It's your marginal tax dollar. It's above a very, very, very high sort of level. It's for people with very high incomes. And so when you think of that, I always say, I ask, and I think I told this story in your program before, but, you know, I ask kids, tell me the name of billionaires, you know, equivalent to billionaires, they were millionaires back then, of the Gilded Age. And they'll say all the names. They know names. They know Carnegies. They know Morgans. They know, you know,
Vanderbilts. Sure.
Yeah, Vanderbilts. And, you know, they know their, you know, Rockefellers. And I say, give me names of, you know, our billionaires now. And they know, you know, all of the, you know, the Bezos and the, you know, whatever, you know, the Bill Gates and so on and so forth of our era. Ask, give me the name of a billionaire or a very wealthy millionaire, whatever it was at that time, of the 50s and 60s. And they don't have any names. And they don't have any names. I think I told you the joke. The one I like is the kid that said Hugh Hefner, you know, but, you know, he wasn't that sort of a millionaire. But, you know, there weren't.
He was rich in other ways, though.
Yes, he was rich in other ways. A rich life he led, but yeah. But the point is, there weren't, and that's a reason why we call this a new Gilded Age. So it is a new Gilded Age. So that's number one. So the fact that the tax system was more progressive, that we did tax the rich more, was also associated to the fact that we didn't have those billionaires. And the other side of the coin is that we had a stronger, more vital middle class. That middle class wasn't, you know, it was a middle class that were blue collar workers that, you know, had a high school sort of diploma and had gone to work in manufacturing. essentially. So a good chunk of the middle class was dead, working class middle class, not a, you know, relatively wealthy, you know, upper middle class that it's very separated and distant from you know, the working, you know, the working poor these days, we can say. So the cohesion and, you know, that we had socially in many ways was associated to the fact that we had a more progressive, tax system back then. So that was eroded, starting with what? With Reagan. So the tax rates had already come somewhat down to something like 70%. And by the time of Reagan, they reduced to less than 30%. So they're in the 20s. And they managed to bring it a little bit back up, you know, with Clinton in, you know, to the 30s. And then, of course, Bush brought it back down. And then Obama brought it back up. And then Trump brought it back down and so on and so forth. So, but we're oscillating there. It's in the 30s. So that's the story there. So the story is that we don't pay a lot of taxes. The wealthy pay less taxes. And that has had a significant impact on the working class. But, you know, on top of that, so it's not just that, you know, the inequality that I think comes with that. I was going to say something, but now I'm blocking what I had another sort of topic, but I said two things, but I'm blocking the second. I apologize.
No, but look, you know, I was just explaining this to my daughter just the other day, oddly enough. That, you know, back in the 50s, we had a very progressive tax code. Every $2,000, the tax rate went up a little bit, just incrementally up until, like, I think it was $200,000 a year is what triggered the top marginal tax rate of 92%. But you paid that little increment all the way up. And to your point, you know, the first dollar is the least taxed, and it's that one over $200,000 that got the 92% tax rate. And I argued to her, I said, look, you know, we didn't have the billionaires, as you pointed out. The money that was being made was put into factories, was put into higher wages, better benefits, was put into philanthropy, building schools or hospitals or other things if they didn't want the government to take the money. But it was being used in the community. Now what we've done, thanks to Reagan and these massive tax breaks, is we've created hoarders.
Well, the other thing was tax havens. The other thing is they don't pay taxes. So the story here is, you know, look, Romney's father, you know, Republican Michigan, you know, governor back when, George Romney, he when he was a candidate for the presidency, he opened up his tax accounts. He showed, I remember this because Romney gave us 2 years of taxes when he was a presidential candidate. His father had given apparently 12 years. So he had given you know, he opened up his accounts. Why did Romney give us 2 years? Because knowing he was going to run for the presidency, he, being a potty-trained Republican, one that tries to look normal, he went on to pay some taxes so that it looked like he was actually paying more taxes or as much as regular folk pay of taxes. So that they could look at it, and it was whatever it was, 17% of his income, something right, like that. But that was sort of an arranged thing. Trump, you have to give it to him. He tried to hide completely this. He never gave you the taxes. And there are many reasons. Perhaps he doesn't have the money, so it's not necessary. But it is okay. It has been sort of, because we know that they do have the money in tax havens and that they don't pay taxes. So that's the norm. So not only they pay less taxes because we reduced and created all sorts of mechanisms for that to do that, but on top of that, we have deregulated so much the global economy that the very wealthy, not just in the US, globally, can go around and not pay taxes. And so who pays taxes? The suckers that, you know, live from wages. And those can be taxed very easily because, you know, they tax it, you know, directly. You don't even get the money. So and again, I think that there is another important thing that, you know, it's not, I always say, I don't like pay, you know, comes April, I'm not the biggest fan of, you know, of the IRS and the tax system. But the problem is, how are you going to have a society in which the things that we do need, the public schools, I went to vote today. So, you know, how are you going to have decent public schools to educate your kids? How are you going to have the hospitals that, you know, yep, that can, you know, serve you in an emergency, that when you're in old age, you know, can provide you with the minimum things that you will need? And so people forget that you're getting something in exchange for those, you know, tax dollars that you're paying. And so That's the part, the solidarity. You know, if you are part of society, you know, the myth of the conservative story is that society doesn't exist, that we are all just individuals and then we don't care for each other. And that's the dangerous, I think, sort of idea. So if you live in society, part of the sort of, you know, social norms is that we do care for each other. And if we do care for each other, the taxes are the way that we care for each other. And it's not just the taxes, I say, it's how we spend the money. It's how we spend the money. You see in a government what the government is trying to do. And I should say, in favor of Biden, he's trying to switch some of the things that we use to spend money that we stop spending money on infrastructure. So he put, for example, we're going to spend on public transportation and on trains, on bringing back some, you know, jobs, manufacturing, good jobs back home. Those are the things, because it shows where your commitments are. So how do we build community? It's how you spend the money and who you tax. So if you tax the wealthy and you spend on things that are, you know, community building endeavors, that's a government that works for, you know, the working people.
No, and you're spot on. So the last question I have is, you know, when you look at this piece that I sent you and you think about what the point of that is, who are they convincing and what are they convincing that person of? What goes through your mind?
Well, they're trying to cheaply tell this person that you're being robbed, that, you know, they're taking away 40 cents out of every dollar that you have to earn there, you know, with your work, and they're robbing you. And we talked about this. It's the advantage of the conservative sort of stories is they have simple slogans. And it's very hard to tell the person that those 40 cents are what allowed, you know, most of them to have a retirement at all. That, you know, that they their parents are, you know, not necessarily, you know, because they have Medicare and Social Security, they do have a decent life in old age, that they can send their kids to school. So all of that is omitted, you know, and so it's very hard to have a simple slogan that tells this person, look, you're better off because you're paying those 40 cents. You're getting actually more back than you're putting in. And there is a part of your life that you're putting in more than you're getting out, but there'll be a part that you'll take considerably more out than you're getting in. And so that is lost in most people. You know, and so it is hard. So there is a clear target. The target here is the working class. The conservatives have been very good at, you know, faking it, that they are on the side of the working poor, and that a system with no taxes would favor the poor. But at the end of the day, that means that if you have a problem, if you want to, you know, health insurance, if you want education, you'll have to pay it with your dollars, and you won't be able to pay it. So the 40 cents pay for stuff that if you have to go to the private market, you cannot get.
Yeah.
So those 40 cents are subsidizing relatively cheap, good quality. And we still have it. It's not as good as it should be, but we still have decent education. We have decent health, and those things are paid with those 40 cents. And they're subsidized. It's cheap. You're getting it cheap. That's the story.
There you go. Mateus, I appreciate the time. Always good talking with you, my friend.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Good stuff. Our good friend Mateus Vernango. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, the simple response here, and Mateus is right, it's the outrage candy. It's to get you to hate the fact that I shouldn't have to pay taxes. And, you know, the argument is, well, maybe you shouldn't. Rich people don't do it. And this is one of those things where you go, maybe, I don't know, here's a thought, maybe they should. Maybe we should be taxing the very wealthy. I know Republicans are doing their best to gut the IRS funding that Biden got put in there to ensure we've got enough IRS agents to go and dig into some of these really complicated returns. What these right-wingers do masterfully is it's the low-hanging fruit. It's just to make you mad. It's the outrage candy. It's the daily outrage because they're exposing the tax. And here's the thing, the Senate Budget Committee on Wednesday, they're going to be exposing the wealthy tax cheats hearing. And the title of the hearing, Fairness and Fiscal Responsibility, Cracking Down on Wealthy Tax Cheats. It's going to happen at Dirksen Senate Office Building on Wednesday. And it's, for me, I'm looking forward to this because I think, maybe there's an opportunity to do some pointing out that, yeah, these rich people have been walking away from paying taxes for a very long time. And there's that guy, and they're honest about it. I mean, this is the thing that gets me about Trump. He was honest. He said, look, yeah, of course I take all of these tax breaks. Of course I take all of this. I take every deduction possible. Of course I do, because I'm smart. And also we lobby for them so that we don't have to pay taxes. There's that guy, that rich dad, poor dad guy. He says it all the time. Rich people don't pay taxes because they don't make income. They don't go to work at a job. And this is where, if you want some real outrage, it's the fact that your boss, we keep saying, well, the boss is paying all these taxes. No, he's not. Got one of the lowest corporate tax rates we've had, at least in my lifetime. And probably in the last, 75 years. It has never been a better time to be rich than right now because, the inheritance tax is almost gone. You've got opportunities to hoard money overseas and not pay taxes. I mean, it's really quite remarkable what they've been able to do and then con us into saying taxes are bad. And I like what Mateus said. He goes, look, income tax was something that working people fought for, to make sure that the wealth class, who is hoarding all of the wealth, who is taking all of all of their labor and hoarding it. And this is one of those moments where maybe we need to be reclaiming this. And I've been saying for a long time, I want to go back to the good socialist president, David Eisenhower's tax code. Because, and look, I've known some people who were in business back in that era. You had a corporate tax rate of 56%. Not 15, 56%. It's how we paid for education. It's how we paid for infrastructure. Eisenhower had, at that point, the largest infrastructure bill in the history of this country. Built the highway system. How'd he do it? Taxing people. I'm an old school tax and spend Republican, evidently, because I believe you tax rich people and you spend it on things you need. But today's GOP, and look, the GOP of my lifetime has never been about raising revenue. It's always been about privatizing, give it to the privateers because they're smart. They know what to do with it. And they do. They make more for themselves. This is one of these important issues. So we'll see what happens out of this hearing. I'm kind of interested in seeing where things go. A lot of this stuff is just dog and pony show. But hopefully there's some policy that comes out of this. Hopefully there's a way to go, hey, you know what? You're right, rich dad, poor dad. You're right. You know, rich people don't pay income taxes. Maybe we start taxing their wealth. Maybe the stuff that they're hoarding, maybe we take a look at that. Maybe we ensure that you pay some.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Special Report. CBS News projects Ohio voters approve a ballot measure to enshrine the right to an abortion in the state constitution. Dr. Catherine Romanos in Columbus.
I will never again have to look a patient in the eye and tell them that I'm not allowed to provide them the health care that they need.
CBS's Adriana Diaz.
What that's showing is that Americans are still galvanized by this issue. You know, Dobbs happened more than a year ago, and it's still something that's driving people to the polls, and Democrats especially want to see if that's going to continue to next year.
President Biden says in a statement on Ohio Issue 1 that Americans once again voted to protect their fundamental freedoms and democracy won. CBS News also projects Democratic Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear will win re-election. Correspondent Ed O'Keefe.
He's just a wildly popular governor compared to most across the country, and especially for a Democrat. Some say, look, he may have shown Democrats how to do it in states like Kentucky, or maybe he's a vice presidential candidate one day.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehill. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin Elections Commission is countering false claims made in the Wisconsin Assembly's impeachment articles against Administrator Megan Wolf. The articles list several grievances, including assertions that Wolf mismanaged Wisconsin's 2020 ballot count and that she enabled illegal absentee voting in long-term care facilities. The WEC counters that all decisions are made by its six bipartisan commissioners and not Wolf. Postal workers in Milwaukee are demanding safer working conditions. The National Association of Letter Carriers rallied at Milwaukee's downtown post office Sunday. Eight people were arrested not long ago in a mail carrier robbery ring in the city. Another letter carrier was murdered on his route. Postal workers at the rally say they want the post office to work with the union to find solutions. Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
The delusions of grandeur have come to an end, as has the campaign of former Vice President Mike Pence. You know, people didn't care for him so much. I don't know why. You know, January 6th, they just wanted to hang him at the gallows, Dom.
I mean, at least they knew his name. You know, there's no such thing as bad PR, Crudy.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Cloudy tonight with scattered rain showers likely. Lowest dip down to about 39. Winds out of the east, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy again tomorrow. Scattered thunderstorms likely, 50.
For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 39 degrees.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Are you asking the court to do something that spells out a school funding formula?
This is not about the school finance formula itself. It's about the voucher programs. It says to create a system of public schools. It doesn't say anything about creating two parallel systems and sucking the money out of the public school system and providing it to the private school system, which is what is happening.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday mornings 6 till 8
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Join the conversation with your favorite hosts or shows anytime. Follow Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Share your thoughts on our social media channels wherever you are, whenever you want. The Civic Media Network of local radio stations here for you.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Some peacemaking from this hardcore laissez-faire ideologue. For example, guess who he's chosen to be his director of policy? Big Pharma's top Washington lobbyist. Dan Ziegler has been the chief influence peddler for a dozen multi-billion dollar drug giants, including Eli Lilly, Merck, and Pfizer. Ziegler has furiously opposed every legislative effort to stop the rampant price gouging. even though 90% of Americans are clamoring for Congress to clamp down on pharmaceutical ripoffs. But we 90%ers don't control the revolving door. Mike does. Johnson piously cloaks himself in both the Christian gospel and libertarian myth of free markets, yet he has consistently pushed government action to restrict competition and protect drug monopolies. Now, in his first substantive action as Speaker, he is literally bringing Big Pharma inside to sit with him in the seat of legislative power. This is Jim Hightower saying drug pricing reform will soon come up for a vote in Congress. Before Mike's lobbyist buddy tells him what to do, let's demand that he reread the Sermon on the Mount.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com. So, looks like potentially a strike out in Las Vegas as tens of thousands of Las Vegas Strip hotel workers at 18 casinos could go on strike, Friday? Thursday's the deadline. As I understand it, and here to share some thoughts on maybe what's going on. I think we've got Jennifer Marshall. She's a food service worker at the Paris Casino. She's a member of the Culinary Workers Union Local 226 out there. Jennifer, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. This is Bethany Kahn from the Culinary Union. We're in negotiations, so it's a bit crazy. Jennifer's in the subcommittee right now, and I can't pull her, but I'm happy to chat with you, and I can find someone else, too.
All right, Bethany, where are we? What's going on? Where are we?
So we're in negotiations right now for 35,000 workers in Las Vegas. We're literally in negotiations right now. And the Culinary Union has set a strike deadline of Friday at 5 a.m., and if we can't reach a deal, then workers are going to walk. And we're fighting for the best contract ever, highest wage increases ever, safety, technology language, to make sure workers aren't left behind. And we're trying to make sure that workers can thrive and do more than just, survive.
Yeah, I mean, the old bread and roses frame. Bread, yes, but roses too. Yeah, we want to be able to get our necessities, but a couple of nice things every once in a while. We'd like that too, right?
Yeah, and we feel that workers deserve that because Culinary Union members comprise of a majority of Nevada's middle class, and we want to thrive. These companies are making record profits. They're making billions of dollars, and workers are working more than one job. Our jobs are good union jobs, but since the pandemic, we've seen that more and more workers are working two jobs and their one job, like workers are feeling like they're doing way more work, or we've seen that workers are literally doing two jobs to make ends meet, and that is not right.
Yeah, and coming out of the pandemic, and again, I don't think we talk about the pandemic enough and the frames that came out of it, the people, being, essential and frontline heroes and all those things, only to say now it's over, going back to no longer being essential or heroes, and we want to cheat you out of wages in crummy conditions. So it sounds to me like they want to go back to 2019.
Well, I don't know what they want to go back to, but, since the pandemic, I think they got addicted to their profits. They cut a lot of labor costs during the pandemic, and workers stepped up. We sacrificed. We did more work. We did more work to make sure that the companies would stay open, that business could survive. And now that the companies are back and they're back more than 100%, they're making all this money, we want to make sure that workers can thrive and aren't left behind. Right? Since the pandemic, the biggest transfer of wealth has been happening in every industry across the country, and workers in Las Vegas are standing up to make sure we're not left behind.
So November 10th is the deadline, as I understand it, right?
That's right. So it's Friday at 5 a.m. Pacific.
And that would basically shut the strip down, no?
Well, 35,000 workers at 18 casinos. So it's MGM Resorts, all about nine of their casinos, or eight or nine. Caesars Entertainment, same. And then Wynn Resorts. So 18 different casinos. It's a majority. I would say it's a majority of the casinos on the Strip and a majority of Culinary Union members. We represent, the Culinary Union represents 60,000 workers, and 35,000 are up to strike on Friday.
And, you know, this is, again, nobody wants a strike. This is one of those things I say all the time. It's the last arrow in the quiver. So we must be getting to that end of the rope, so to speak.
Yes. And I actually have Aretha Wilder, who's a cocktail server at the Flamingo, who stepped out of subcommittee. Aretha, do you want to tell us why you're willing to go on strike on Friday?
Yes, I will. Hello?
Yeah, please tell us.
Yes, sir, I'm willing to go on strike for my family, for my benefits, so I don't have to work on two and three stations to put money into my benefits package for safety. Ever since the pandemic, we've been working two and three stations. Our hours have been cut. We don't have enough workers. Lots of things.
Yeah. No, and talking with Bethany, these casinos are making record profits off of your labor. It's only sane and rational that you should share in the fruits of your labor.
Not only are they making record profits, but they're making record profits and they're bragging about it, as they're not, at the same time, not willing to share those profits.
Isn't that amazing? I've listened to a lot of these earnings calls over the last 2 years, you know, where these companies are talking about how much wealth that they're pocketing and how much they're transferring to the shareholders. And yet, you know, when they come to the bargaining table, and I'm sure you're seeing this firsthand, they're crying poverty. We couldn't possibly give you an extra quarter or 50 cents because we've got shareholders to feed.
Sir, I've been working at the Flamingo Hotel since I was 21 years old. I've been there for 32 years, my entire adult life.
Wow.
And I believe that I deserve a fair share. I deserve to not have to work two stations. I deserve to have them not tell me I'm not putting money into your pension, or we're not going to raise your pay enough to you so you can afford this astronomical rent that we have now, and all of these other things. Ever since the pandemic, the gas has got everything, right. And we can't keep up, and now we work twice as hard, and now they're making twice as much money, and they're telling us we can't have any of it.
No, and that's, you know, this is not just you. It's a lot of people across the country who feel the same way. But fortunately, you have the ability to sit down and negotiate for this. Was it always like this? I mean, you said you've spent your entire adult life working in this industry. Was it always like this? Has it always been? Have they always been this stingy?
No, sir. Actually, there have been so many times since I have been employed there that we've just not only have they've been reasonable, and more than that, there's been several times we've helped them out of situations. I was here during 9/11, and we had to help the companies, and we were in a partnership, and we held back our raises and our benefits package, or after the mass shooting, or after the pandemic, every time, or when the companies went bankrupt a couple times. We stuck it out. We deferred things. We helped build the company back up. We brought the people back. People come back all the time and, you know, and say, hey, Aretha, you know, I haven't seen you since last year. No one says that about my manager.
I'm sure not. But
you know,
what's interesting to me, Aretha, and this is the interesting part of this, and I'm glad you brought this up. You know, it's amazing how when things are not going well for the companies, they know where to go to get bailed out. But when things are going really well for them, they forget all about the people who helped them out in their time of need.
Yeah. When after 9/11, they gave a several speeches about how we're all in it together. And they were telling the truth. I mean, they were suffering. We knew they were suffering. We were suffering with them, and we helped them because we had to. We have a symbiotic relationship. We can't survive without them, and they need to recognize that they can't survive without us, sir.
Yeah, well, not for now, because eventually I'm sure they want to go to robots or automated kiosks or whatever, which I got to think is part of what you're negotiating to ensure that you have jobs in the future and aren't automated away, right?
Absolutely, because if they could already, they'd have a robot doing all and every aspect of my job.
And you're not alone. I keep seeing all of these videos of this job being automated, and eventually corporate America will do away with all working people, which is why I think it's important, much like the UAW did, much like the Teamsters did, got it in their contract that there will be a sane, rational transition and that working people aren't going to take it on the chin as technology comes online.
Yeah, we've seen all those sci-fi movies.
Yeah, so let me ask you, your coworkers. I mean, you've been around a while. You're probably the one people look to. What's the sense right now? Do you feel that, on the 10th that there may be a strike? Are people eager? What seems to be the sense?
The sense that I feel are that the workers are willing to strike. They feel that their backs are against the wall. The companies are asking in some instances for, a shorter work week or short, to reduce hours. We feel like our backs are against the wall. We can't go backwards and we can't stay right here.
Yeah.
If we stay right here, we'll sink. We can't go anywhere. It's not like, San Francisco or something where we can live in another place and then come here to work. We're here.
Now this is your industry.
We live here and we have to be able to afford to live here. It shouldn't be that I'm a fourth generation Las Vegan and I can't afford to live here. This isn't Hawaii. We're not an island. This is absurd.
No, I'm with you on that. And look, this is the reason that you sit down at the table and you negotiate for this stuff. So what, and I don't want you to get into all the nuts and bolts, but what seems to be the sense on the other side? Are they dug in? Is it going to take a strike? Because I say sometimes, nobody wants to go on strike, and I'm sure nobody's eager to have to do this. But sometimes, as you've pointed out, your back's against the wall and you have no other choice. It's kind of like the last arrow in the quiver to jumpstart negotiations and show the other side you're serious. Do you think they believe you're serious?
Where I'm optimistic. We'll see. We'll see tonight whether or not they are, if they're for real or not.
What's it take to get this done? What are we looking for?
Just a compromise on various issues. We're getting close, but we're not quite there yet. Hopefully we will be by the end of our discussions today.
Well, I wish you the best. I hope you don't have to go on strike, but if you do, one day longer, one day stronger, we want to keep in touch with you. Bethany, I appreciate you taking time for us. I wish you guys the best. Good luck, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you. God bless you, sir.
As I said, nobody wants to go on strike. Nobody wants that kind of disruption in their family life. Nobody wants that kind of disruption at work. But sometimes you're left with no choice. And you heard her say, they feel their backs are against the wall. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1990. That was the day that Lemuel Rickett Boulware died. Boulware had a notorious reputation with labor leaders. He was the vice president for employee relations for General Electric during the 1950s. He took the lead on labor for the company in 1947, a year after a 17-week bitter strike at General Electric. Determined not to have another such strike, Boulware cultivated his own brand of labor relations. He advocated doing extensive research and offering what he called a fair, firm offer at the bargaining table. This meant the company would essentially give their final offer on the first day of bargaining and hold nothing back for future negotiations. This take-it-or-leave-it approach came to be known as Boulwerism. Other companies copied his tactic. Boulware came to be regarded as a master negotiator by corporate leaders. He was known for writing internal communications to GE employees with catchphrases advocating management's position on labor issues. In 1969, at the AFL-CIO convention in Atlantic City, Paul Jennings, the president of the Industrial Union of Electrical Workers, derided Boulware's tactics. Jennings described it as telling the workers what they're entitled to and trying to shove it down their throats. Boulware once described fair share unionism as wrong in principle and bad in practice. He is credited with helping to move Ronald Reagan to a more conservative approach to labor. Reagan went to work as a spokesperson for General Electric in 1954. At the time, Reagan had been a Democrat and also president of his union, the Screen Actors Guild. During his time at GE, he moved increasingly to the radical right, especially on labor issues. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. And look, you know, I listened to the folks with the Culinary Union. Look, 35,000 people going on, potentially on strike on Friday. No small feat. And, you know, the Culinary Union is one of my favorite, one of the most militant groups in the country. And look, if they say they're going on strike, they will. And this is one of those weird moments. And I mentioned it a second ago. I've listened to a lot of these earnings calls. I've listened to oil executives talk about, you know, how much record profits they're making quarter over quarter, but gas prices are through the roof and they're not going to drill anymore to help bring that down. No, because they like it right where it is. And I've listened to these corporations, you know, throughout the last 2 years talk about how, you know, they're maximizing shareholder value. And I can't help but remember, I think it was August 19th, 2019. That the Business Roundtable came out with their edict that it was no longer about maximizing shareholder wealth. No. It was now they cared about their communities. They cared about all the stakeholders, the communities, the workers, their customers. Yeah, they cared about all of those suckers. And then they had the pandemic to prove it and didn't. So are we surprised coming out of the pandemic that they've been hoarding and gouging and really the cause of the inflation that we're suffering through? Look, you know, it's real. Rent prices are way too high. Why? Because we've got hedge fund managers and private equity firms buying up all of the rental properties and jacking up the rent. Why? Because they can. We got gas prices still way too high. Why? Because they can. Food prices way too high. Why? Again, I think you know the response. This could be like a religious moment where we do that, you know, I'll say something out and you just shout out because they can. Because that's where we are. All of this stuff is happening because we've given so much power to corporate America. So when you look at an industry like the casino industry in Las Vegas right now, who's wildly, wildly profitable, saying, gee, you know, the people who actually do the work that make us all this money. Yeah, we'd like to share, you know, we're in defense of the market, in defense of what might happen in the future. We just can't possibly share. But when times get tough, and the UAW is a perfect example of this, you know, when times get tough, they know where to come for concessions. They know who to go to say, hey, can you spare a little? Can you tighten the belt a little bit? Can you sacrifice just a little to help us out here? And of course the workers always do. It's a learned response. Corporate America knows. Yeah, of course. Of course we can go back to the workers and you know, claw back some of those wage gains and destroy some of those health benefits, make them a little bit worse, a little cheaper for us. And you go, when do we say enough? And this is where these workers have to be in this moment. You know, they did help. They did sacrifice. They did give back. They did give concessions. And now that, you know, now that the coffers are full, the casinos don't want to share. It's like the big three auto companies going, we made a quarter of $1 trillion profit over the last decade, but the future is uncertain. Yeah, the future is uncertain, but you know what I'm certain of? That if bad things happen in the future, you're going to come back to those very workers and you're going to say, oh, gee, times are tough. We're going to have to claw some of that back. We know that. So it's one of those moments where you go, when times are good, you share the wealth. When times are tough, you share the sacrifice. But they don't want to do that. When times are tough, you sacrifice. When times are good, we'll profit. Something fundamentally wrong with that. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So I got a bunch of emails, and I want to clarify where we're going, what we're doing, and why. We, as of December 1st, will be our last broadcast on live terrestrial radio. We've been doing live radio for 18 years now plus. And look, it's run its course. We've reached the growth potential that is out there. There's nowhere for us to go to expand our reach and to do the things that we want to do. So an offer and an idea came up that we're gonna expand into television. We've been doing a TV program for a while, but we were going to put all of our effort into a free speech show, and that will run during their prime hours twice a day. So it's going to give us the opportunity to do the kind of show that we've always wanted to do, get off of the wheels, off the wheel, so to speak, and really put some effort into the kind of programming we want to do in the future. So Free Speech TV Daily, we're going to be hitting that hard in the new year. That audio from the TV show, we are going to offer to radio stations if they choose to air it. A lot of the stations that we're on currently, of the 50 some odd stations that we're on, they are going to pick up some form of the audio and air it. So we may not go away from terrestrial entirely, but we're just not going to be doing it live anymore. As someone who works, 40 plus hours a week at a job and then comes and does this, these are long days. And with our revenue shortfalls, we had to make the decision, where is the best bang for our resources? Where do we reach the most people? And clearly television is where that is. A lot of funding sources have said, hey, radio's dead. And I'm sorry for everyone who's listening, but that's what, the Democrats, that's what labor, that's what the left thinks of radio, which is why they're getting their butts kicked every day in messaging, because they don't want to compete in the talk radio space. And I've said this before, we're on a list of 100 talk shows. We made Talkers Magazine a heavy 100 list. Of the 100 top programs in the country, 95 of them hate working people. And are funded probably 10 times more than we've ever raised in any given year. So, of course, the message is going to get out in those spaces. But so that folks understand, we're not going away. We're expanding into places where we're going to be able to get the best reach and the best opportunities for the effort that we're putting in. I hate the fact that we're going away from talk radio. I hate the fact that we're leaving this time slot. I've loved my time doing this. I love interacting with people. It's been my passion for all these years. But this is a good move. This is a smart move in this moment. And this is where we're heading. I hope people will follow us. We will obviously be putting out the audio from the TV show for podcasts. And we're going to do a bunch of things that I've wanted to do for a while. I would like to do some more in-depth interview kind of stuff, specifically for podcast. We do want to get out on picket lines. We want to get out into doing events and stuff again. So we're going to have some really exciting stuff going on in 2024. And with it being an election year, being not tethered to this chair from 9 to 11 Eastern time every weeknight, going to give us some opportunities to do some fun and exciting stuff that we hope to bring back, not just to television, but also to our podcasts and to our radio friends who are going to air the audio from that. You can still participate with the program. And this is, you know, someone said, you know, what, will we lose track of you? No. You can always email me. That's the easiest way. And we're also talking about, and we're in talks with the free speech folks to doing a weekly call-in TV show. So for people who, hey, I want to call in and want to argue or whatever, we're working on that.
You are listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.